Good evening, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to Arab Voices on Houston's Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free KPFT 90.1 FM, with live streaming, podcasting, and online archive of previous shows at both kpft.org and arabvoices.net. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host Mark. Today on Arab Voices, we have two special guests. We have Adam Shapiro, Jewish-American activist and co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement in Palestine, and also Kathy Sheets, medical officer, nurse, human rights activist, and filmmaker. Both Adam and Kathy were on board the Free Gaza boat Spirit of Humanity on a mission to Gaza when their boat was boarded by the Israeli soldiers, and they were kidnapped and jailed in Israeli jails. They both have just returned to the United States. They will be joining us live, and we will be taking your questions live. So please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. And we are joined now live with two guests. We have Adam Shapiro with us on the line. Adam Shapiro is a Jewish-American activist and co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement in Palestine. He is a documentary filmmaker whose latest work is Chronicles of a Refugee, a six-part series about Palestinian refugees all over the world and their experiences of the last 61 years. Adam was on board the Free Gaza boat Spirit of Humanity when he was kidnapped and jailed by the Israeli army. Adam has just returned to the U.S. We are also joined live by Kathy Sheets. Kathy is a medical officer, nurse, human rights activist, and filmmaker. She was also on board the Free Gaza boat Spirit of Humanity when she was kidnapped and jailed by the State of Israel. Kathy has also just returned to the U.S. Adam and Kathy, welcome to Arab Voices.
Thank you for having us, Dave.
Thank you. We're pleased to have you on the show. And first of all, congratulations on your safe return to the United States and your safe well-being after this tragic incident that we are going to hear the details about it from both of you and to share your experiences. Adam, if I may start with you, please. Is this or was that your first planned trip through the Free Gaza mission?
Yes, for me this was my first trip. Of course, my wife Hueda is one of the main organizers of Free Gaza, so I've been following their work since the beginning, but this was my first time on the boats.
Tell me more about it. Why did you decide to join that mission?
I decided to join this mission in particular because I had been in Gaza in February with a delegation from the National Lawyers Guild, and I was there videotaping eyewitness testimony to the atrocities that occurred in January. And it really, you know, although I follow the situation closely and I'm very much active on the Palestinian issue, seeing Gaza for myself for the first time in what was 9 years since the last time I was able to get into Gaza, and meeting with friends and colleagues who were there and really seeing the situation on the ground, I felt compelled more than ever to really do something and to really challenge Israel's control over Gaza and the people of Gaza.
And Kathy, how about you? Why did you decide, and is this your first planned trip to Gaza, or was it your first planned trip to Gaza?
Well, actually, it was my second planned trip to Gaza. My first one was the maiden voyage of Free Gaza back in August 2008. And I wanted to go after I became more and more aware, honestly. I haven't been a seasoned activist like Adam has on the Palestinian issue until several years ago. I mainly focused on Haiti, but I became more and more outraged the more I found out and contacted a group in San Francisco, and they were saying, look, we think it's, we're going to try to send a boat. And so I became interested in their design, and we sat around and planned for a year, and it was amazing to get in one time. And of course there were other boats after that that got in, but I wanted to go back in the worst way, and so I felt the same way Adam did, that just a passion to get back there to these wonderful people that are in an awful situation.
Of course, the Gaza Strip has been besieged for over for 2.5 years now, and under severe measures by the Israeli army, not allowing medicine and supplies and other goods to enter, or people who need medical attention to leave the Gaza Strip. And that's why missions such as the Free Gaza mission, they've organized several boats to break the siege, to deliver medical supplies and needed items through the sea directly to Gaza. Of course, there were a few trips in the past, and this latest one, it departed, and both of you were on it, departed Cyprus Monday morning on June 29th, and it had 21 human rights and solidarity workers representing 11 different countries, three from the United States, as I understand it, and that's both of you, Adam Shapiro and Kathy Sheets, as well as Cynthia McKinney, former congresswoman, who was on our show in the past, by the way. And the three of you, just like the other 18 on board, were all approached by the Israeli army on the sea. They boarded the boat. We want to hear the details of what happened. Adam, if you can shed some light on what exactly took place.
Sure. We were first contacted by the Israeli Navy actually in the middle of the night, in the early hours, as Monday turned into Tuesday. And they ordered us to turn around. They threatened to shoot at the boat. They threatened to use all necessary force. For a few hours in the middle of the night, they had one of their spotlights on our boat, and they jammed our radio communications. They jammed our GPS positioning software. They forcing the captain of the boat to navigate by a simple compass and really by looking at the stars. It was really quite something. By later that day in the afternoon, of course, we had 8 Israeli naval warships trailing us and surrounding us, and then eventually 4 high-speed Zodiac boats full of commandos chasing after us and ultimately boarding the ship. I was filming I was documenting the whole trip, and I was standing near the wheelhouse, which of course was the first place that the commandos went when they got on board. And because I was filming, I was one of the first people targeted, and so I had 2 soldiers on top of me punching and kicking, and ultimately a third one coming and choking for a bit. To get the camera out of my hands and to, you know, get me tied up. I don't know, it must have lasted a couple of minutes, and then eventually, you know, it didn't take long for the commandos to take control of the boat, and then I was brought back to the other room with the rest of the people who were on the boat.
Were others also beaten and attacked by the Israeli army?
I don't know. I know that where I was only me and the captain and one other crew member, and the captain and the other crew person were immediately put on their knees. I don't think any physical force was used against them. But I don't know. Kathy was in the back with the other group, passengers, so maybe she would know.
Kathy, were you attacked by the Israeli Navy or Israeli Army when they boarded the ship?
I actually wasn't attacked. However, Adam's wife, Hueda, was targeted. In fact, I think they actually had a picture of her when they boarded, so they were looking for her. They knew that she was probably, you know, one of the prime leaders, and they attacked her and the Nobel Prize winner, Mireid, and they were very rough with them, and actually put them in the galley so that Mireid became so sick she had to have IVs when we got in, because she was stuck in this area where she was down on the floor and couldn't see anything, and you could just hear plates crashing above them. I don't know. Hueda seemed like she survived that pretty well, but I also saw a number of people were handcuffed, and I'm not even sure why, but for the most part, those people in the cabin, in the main room, weren't in any active activity when they came in. So they seemed to be spared of any force by the...
Was it clear? Of course, this trip was not a secret. There was a humongous amount of publicity about it in advance during that. And was there any doubt that the Israeli army knew who that ship was, or what was it for, or was it clear to them that this was the Free Gaza boat?
Absolutely clear. It was a Free Gaza boat. We had, and Adam can probably address this more because he was up in front when they were conversing with the Free Gaza, the IDF, the Israeli Navy, and our boat were constantly referring to each other by name, you know, Free Gaza. Or they, I guess Adam can, were they calling us Ariane? I think they probably were, but they were directly talking to us, and we were directly telling them there were 21 unarmed civilians on board, so there was absolutely no question as to who they were approaching.
And was this ship, at the time they boarded it, Adam, was it in international waters, in Palestinian waters, or was it in Israeli water?
It's a bit murky because of the status of these waters in terms of various agreements that have been concluded over time. We definitely were not in Israeli territorial waters, no matter how these waters are defined. At no time have they ever been defined as Israeli territorial waters. As to whether or not they were Palestinian waters is a bit in up in the air, because if you go back to the Oslo Accords, defined a certain part of the water off Gaza's coast to be Palestinian water, with an additional body of water up out to the 20-mile mark off of Gaza's coast to be under Israeli control, basically Israeli occupation, as the rest of the Gaza Strip was and continues to be. Now, we know that Israel has marked this area as a blockaded area, and herein is where we have what we believe to be a legal argument that is supported by what much of the international community has said, that Israel is blockading this area, and yet Israel is also still occupying the Gaza Strip. Now, according to international law, an occupying power is responsible for the population that it occupies. And so by that legal standard, an occupying power cannot blockade a territory that it occupies. It cannot collectively punish 1.5 million people under its control. And so the blockade, although Israel may want to say it's blockading Gaza, that blockade is therefore illegal in international law. And so when we set off, we clearly stated that we were going to challenge this blockade to sail into Gaza, because we consider the blockade illegal, and we consider that the people of Gaza are in need of humanitarian aid, of reconstruction aid, and of, you know, an open channel to the rest of the world, which, as an occupied people, they still have a right to. And so the interesting thing is about the waters, it almost becomes, in terms of our detention, it almost becomes an irrelevant issue, because what I found out when I was when I had a hearing with a judge about my detention is that Israel claimed that we were being held and deported because we entered Israel illegally at the point in time when we entered Ashdod's port, when the Navy took our boat to Ashdod. Meaning, by virtue of their kidnapping us at sea and forcing us into Israel, they were forcing us to enter the country illegally. And that is the point at which they said we had, you know, violated Israel's law. And that's why we were being kicked out, not because our boat was in any particular body of water.
Oh, that is absolutely absurd. They kidnap you at gunpoint. Some of you are in handcuffs. Some of you were beaten. They drag you into the Ashdod port, and then they charge you with entering Ashdod illegally. Exactly. It's just trying to justify their criminal act of kidnapping. Did it matter to them that you were all peace activists, human rights activists, peaceful people? Some of you were Americans. You got a former congresswoman. You got a Nobel Peace Prize. So you've got a Jewish American. You, Adam Shapiro, did that? Any of that matter to the Israeli army?
No. None of that matters. And they knew very full well ahead of time who we were, as Kathy indicated. They knew who we were. There was a ton of media coverage. And on top of all of that, the Free Gaza Movement had sent a fax to the Israeli government, stating that we would be heading to Gaza, and this is what was on our ship, and this is what we were doing. So they knew full well exactly what we were, who we were, and what cargo we were carrying.
So what happened then after you were all placed into jails inside Israel? How long did you all stay in jail?
I was held for a total of, we were detained on Tuesday, and I ended up flying back to the U.S. the following Monday.
So almost 1 week.
Almost 1 week. That was the same, I believe, for Kathy and Cynthia as well. I think they were left a little bit later than I did on the same day. The Irish left the next day. The British actually left before us. The Bahrainis, we had five Bahrainis on board our ship, and they actually left. They were only in detention, I believe, 2.5 to 3 days because the government of Bahrain sent a plane to pick them up. To get them out of detention. So we saw a really extraordinary effort by a number of governments to either get their people out of jail or to pressure Israel, like the Irish government put a lot of pressure on Israel to release its citizens. Of course, our government, the U.S. government, was completely silent. And in fact, lied, actually. I saw, after I was released and checking my email, I saw that there was questions at one point to the State Department spokesperson about our detention, and he said he could not comment on it because of Privacy Act issues. The first thing I did when I was seen by the consular official the very first night we were in detention, and I'm sure Kathy and Cynthia did the same thing, was we signed forms saying to the U.S. government that they could answer questions to the media, to the general public, to our families, to our friends about our detention. And so the U.S. government shamefully not only did not do anything to help us get out in terms of pressuring Israel, it also lied to the media about it.
By saying that it would be a violation of your privacy to speak on your behalf when you all signed that form that they can.
Exactly.
Kathy, did you all try? Did you initiate any contact with the U.S. embassy as U.S. citizens that we've been kidnapped, we are in Israeli jails, we are being held illegally against our will? Did you all initiate any contacts with them, or?
Yeah, well, we were very fortunate in that Free Gaza was very organized. They were doing this on our behalf from Cyprus initially, but we also were very fortunate because one of the young women with us was able to call from the deportation center and alert both our lawyers who were standing by and who knew about it anyway, and also the State Department. We were told the State Department was well aware it was happening. But even so, both the lawyers and the State Department were constantly lied to and in many cases had to stand around and wait or keep searching for us within different departments or centers or prisons or whatever. And they didn't seem to have the cooperation of the Israeli government sometimes as to where we were being detained or unable to reach us.
You know, Adam and Kathy, I think if you were all, if that ship was taken by force by Iran or any Arab country or any Muslim country, I have a feeling that the U.S. would have instantly sent its navy ships and its army and everything in the world trying to rescue you or to get you back. But because it's Israel, U.S. citizens become something that's meaningless, that means nothing when it comes to the state of Israel. They have, as if Israel has the right to do anything it wants to do against any American, against any U.S. citizen, without the intervention of the U.S. government here. That is absolutely absurd. On top of that, we provide and we supply the arms to Israel, and we provide it with billions and billions of dollars every single year, despite our bankrupt system here, our entire economic crash, our entire state of California almost declaring a bankruptcy, and we still provide billions of dollars to Israel, and we shut our mouths to the actions of the state of Israel. This is truly outrageous, and it's unconscionable. I want to remind the listeners of the phone number to call and ask questions of our guests. That number is 713-526-5738. Again, it's 713-526-KPFT. And our guests tonight are Adam Shapiro, Jewish-American activist and co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement in Palestine. He's a documentary filmmaker whose latest work is Chronicles of a Refugee, a six-part series about Palestinian refugees all over the world and their experiences of the past 61 years. And we're also joined by Kathy Sheets, a medical officer, nurse, human rights activist, and filmmaker. Both Adam and Kathy were on board the Free Gaza boat Spirit of Humanity. They were on a mission to deliver medical supplies and other needed necessities to Gaza last week when they were kidnapped by the State of Israel, jailed for about a week, and they were released, and they have just returned to the United States. The number again is 713-526-5738. Kathy, what supplies did you all take to Gaza on that board? What was on the boat when you left Cyprus?
Right. Well, we had, it's a small boat, so we had, in some ways, we could call it a symbolic amount of supplies, but we did have 3 tons of medical supplies. Different people brought their own supplies for children, in particular crayons, colored pencils, paper, things like that, that the children, toys, that they wanted to give to children. And we also had some olive trees, and we had a small supply of building materials, a very symbolic amount again. And that's what we're mainly focusing this, and the boats have been focused on more of the human rights issue. So, in fact, we weren't taking copious amounts of aid, more symbolic.
Okay, so it was mainly medical supplies, toys, olive trees, building materials, which is badly needed after the total destruction, the catastrophic destruction by the State of Israel to the Gaza Strip in late December, early January of this year. Israel has been preventing basic medical materials to enter the Gaza Strip so people can rebuild. People are unable to rebuild anything. They still live in tents. Tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip continue to live in tents because Israel refuses to allow basic building materials to enter the Gaza Strip to rebuild what Israel has destroyed in a 21-day war against the Gaza Strip. What happens to that material, either you, Adam or Kathy, what happens to the actual boat and the supplies in it?
I'm very cynical about this. I'll let Adam take this one.
Well, what we know about the boat is that there is a legal battle that will be waged in terms of the boat to secure damages to the boat, any damages that were done. And that will occur in an Israeli court. At the same time, the Greek government, because the boat was flagged and registered in Greece and has a Greek owner, the Greek government is very actively right now working to secure the release of the boat and turning it back over to us, or to the Free Gaza movement, I should say. And in terms of the material on board, we're not sure. Israel right now is claiming that there were no humanitarian aid on board, which means maybe they stole a few tons of stuff that we had. I mean, who knows? So we're not really sure what's happened to that.
If I could break in with a question here before we go to our listeners, I guess either one of you could answer this. The main aim of the trip, obviously, is to partially, one, is to break the siege, but second, really, is maybe to bring as much media attention to the issue as possible. You didn't break the siege because Israel forced you to turn back, or at least didn't allow you to deliver the aid that you wanted to deliver. But do you think you've gotten the right amount of coverage on this issue in the U.S.? Do you think that the media has paid attention? And if not, what are you going to do to make them pay attention? Either one of you can take that.
I mean, I think that we have gotten a decent amount of media coverage. I did see that there was an article in the New York Times. Of course, you have to remember Kathy and I were in jail during the entire time that the story was mainly getting coverage last week. So it's a little bit hard for us to necessarily assess just looking at, you know, catching up on email. But I do know that in Europe, for instance, this received a tremendous amount of coverage. And in the Arab world also, it received a tremendous amount of coverage, which is always good. I in terms of the U.S., obviously, I think it's not enough. But at the same time, it's not surprising. But perhaps if we measure this compared to previous trips, or if we measure it compared to other activities that have happened, or you know, such actions that, for instance, the International Solidarity Movement is involved in, this trip, I think, has generated, even in the U.S., more media attention than previous events or issues. And so maybe there is starting to be a bigger crack in the door for more information to get out about Palestine, about what, especially what's happening in Gaza. And I think Israel's on the defensive. I think we saw that with the Israeli spokesman a number of times, the government spokesman, Mark Regev, and of course, with this government that Israel has, it seems to be very much on the defensive, and I think we need to keep up that pressure. And in terms of American mainstream media, the pressure has to be applied to them as well to cover the story.
Are you in touch with any of the so-called mainstream outlets? Do you inform them and you know, call them out on their lack of coverage? Because as you said, this, you know, I don't think you really need to work too hard to persuade the European or Arab public opinion that there's something wrong with the Israeli occupation of Palestine. But in the U.S., it's a much bigger job. How do you go about it?
Well, we certainly, you know, invite the media to press conferences and to when we launch the boats. I mean, Reuters and Associated Press were there. You know, media outlets back at home, when we have Americans on board or involved in these activities, they contact their local media and let them know that they're going on these boats and you know, doing that kind of work. We try to write op-eds. I am currently pending to hear from the New York Times about an op-ed I just wrote about the whole experience. Hueda also has penned an op-ed, and we're waiting to hear back from the LA Times. So we're trying. It's, of course, you know, this is a long story about the mainstream media and its coverage of Israel and Palestine, and we're trying. At the same time, you know, I think it's not any news that the mainstream media is not necessarily the first place that people turn anymore for their news. And so even if it's on Al Jazeera English, more and more Americans are turning to Al Jazeera English to get news, especially about Palestine, where they know they could get more information and perhaps better information than they can from their, you know, local networks or CNN here in the United States. So,
right. Yeah, I think you're right that a lot of people who have figured out just how bad the corporate-owned press are at covering the real issues don't get their information there anymore. I guess it's the majority of the population that we've got to win over. Kathy, do you want to comment on that same topic before we go to our listeners? And before you do, if I could just remind them of the phone number, 713-526-5738. Kathy, your thoughts on the media topic?
Yeah, well, I guess the first lesson I had in all this is that we had a group of Western media ready to go on the first boat, including Reuters and BBC, and mysteriously, just before we left, they were both pulled. And I think it was after perhaps an interview with Lauren Booth, who was on the first boat, the sister-in-law of Tony Blair. So I could see firsthand right away what we're up against from the very beginning. There was quite a bit of resistance from the networks themselves in terms of covering the story.
Adam, if I could just interrupt for a second, I think there's a lot of interference coming from your phone, Adam. When you're not speaking, it seems to catch a lot of background noise. I'm not sure what that is. I guess, Saeed, shall we take our first listener?
Yes, and again, the phone number is 713-526-5738. We are talking with both Adam Shapiro and Kathy Sheets. Okay, and they are both joining us live right now. Adam Shapiro is a Jewish American activist and co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement, and Kathy Sheets is a medical officer, nurse, human rights activist, and filmmaker. They were both on board the Free Gaza boat, Spirit of Humanity, that was kidnapped by the State of Israel. Both of them spent almost 1 week in jail, and they just returned to the United States. Let's take our first caller, and that is Onwugu. Onwugu, you're on there. Onwugu, can you hear us?
Hello?
Yes, you are live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Okay, thank you for having me on. When I heard this ordeal, this violation of, anyone on the panel can pick up this question. I just want to know, when I heard this last week, there was no question on my mind that the state of Israel was in total violation of your human rights. Is there any way or any way folks who suffered this insult by Israel can take them to court? Can the state of Israel be sued on this account?
Alrighty, thanks for your call. We'll hang up and let's give them the chance to answer. Adam, we'll start with you. Can the state of Israel be sued or taken to court for violating the rights and for what it did?
Well, one place we're going to sue Israel, of course, is in Israeli courts, which, of course, you know, we don't expect much in terms of justice, but I think it's important to do nonetheless, if only to expose to the world the hypocrisy of the Israeli legal system and the hypocrisy of its so-called democracy. At the same time, I mean, we have heard that there are lawmakers in the UK that are pressing for the British government to have a hearing about this act of piracy. We also have heard that Irish parliamentarians are pressing ahead with efforts to hold Israel accountable, be it through some sort of legal mechanism or perhaps through some of the treaties that Israel is involved in with Europe to sort of remove Israel from those agreements. So, you know, I think we have to keep pressing ahead and keep, you know, encouraging lawmakers around the world, and in particular in Europe, which has many economic arrangements with Israel, to hold Israel accountable when it takes such action. I'm not sure there's necessarily a court that we could go to in this regard, however.
Yeah, and of course Israel has a rap sheet of violating international laws and human rights, and from killings to stealing lands to building illegal settlements and colonies. And speaking of laws, as a matter of fact, tomorrow, July 9th, marks the 5th anniversary of the International Court of Justice ruling about the illegal apartheid wall that Israel is building on Palestinian land, and that it called at that time for it to be dismantled, and it called it illegal. And of course Israel ignores that and continues to build the apartheid wall on Palestinian land, dividing Palestinian villages and towns and making the livelihood of Palestinians a living hell. 713-526-5738 is the number. Let's take our next caller, and that would be Brian. You're on there.
Thank you. I don't think it's that big of a shock to anybody that Israel is acting the way they do about anybody that's trying to bring things into Gaza. My question is this: with all the pressure that's coming from Europe and from the Muslim communities throughout the Middle East, the Arab world, and beyond, you know, that's all well and good, but Israel continues to act with impunity as long as they're funded by American money. How do we change public opinion in America to where the secession of those funds that are just handed over without any kind of strings, even bailout money has strings, but just handed over for Israel to act however they want. How do we change public opinion here so that doesn't look to the average American like we're giving in to pressure from outside countries and from outside agencies? Thanks. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks, Brian. That's an excellent question. I'd like to hear the answer from both of you. Kathy, if I may start with you, what do you think will make a difference?
I mean, that's such a good question. You're right. I think so many people are struggling with it. I'm just hoping that the idea of just exposing that, you know, why would people even bother to get in a boat and travel the 200 miles to kind of break this blackout that there is in this country, the ignorance. And I don't mean ignorance in the sense that people, they simply don't have the information available to them, unfortunately. And I'm hoping that... That's why I think we do somehow get information out to even start a dialogue. And I think most of the people in the United States, including a lot of Jewish Voice for Peace, is stepping in quite a bit now. I think people are waking up, and I think more information that we can get out there, the better off will be. But beyond that, I'm not sure what other strategies
Yes.
Okay, Adam, Ariam, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, what about your view on how people can make a difference here, changing public opinion? The caller asked, we give all these billions of dollars to Israel, and Israel feels free to do whatever it wants to do. How can we change the public opinion here in the U.S. and make a difference?
I think this is a very, very large question, but what I would say is I think one of the things that needs to change in order to get this kind of shift that we're looking for is a shift in the discourse about the Palestinian issue away from a question of peace or a question of one or two, a question of two states, to one of a question of justice, a question of freedom for Palestinians. And if we can move it in that direction, the overall, the way the issue is discussed, the way that the Palestine question is handled, and away from these silly negotiations and what kind of state and what kind of government and all that kind of stuff, and turn it more to a fundamental question about basic human rights, freedom, and justice, then I think we can actually see a way to start shifting American policy in this kind of direction.
All right. We have so many other callers on hold, so we want to take as many calls as we can. And I still want to ask you, Kathy, about what you witnessed when you went on that first trip back in August to Gaza, when you broke the siege with the Free Gaza mission, when you actually went there and delivered supplies, what you have witnessed, how you were treated by the Palestinians, and so on. But let's get more participation from our listeners. Let's take our next caller, and that would be Robert. Robert, you're in there.
Hey, Saeed. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just thinking, it's all wonderful that we try to educate the American public, but I think when we really analyze who actually runs this country and who controls the minds of the people in this country, we're up against a huge block that I don't know if we can overcome on this program. But my question is to Adam is, what do you think that the Israeli end game is on all this? I mean, they've shown that they can act with impunity for 22 days and just bomb the heck out of the Gazians, and then they can seize your boat on the high seas and kidnap you and do anything they want to with you. What do you think their end plan is?
Adam, did you hear the question?
Yeah, what do I think the plan is?
What do you think the Israel's end game is with what they're
Israel's
doing?
Israel's end game. I think Israel's end game ultimately is just to control of all the land as much as possible, that they use the negotiations just as a pretext to continue expanding their occupation. Exactly what we see on the ground, the reality on the ground, I think, is just the slow version of what Israel's endgame is. I don't think they necessarily have a time frame in mind, but I do think that ultimately they hope to just continue prevaricating and using whatever, negotiations, using cessation of negotiations, using intifada, using outright blockade and siege of Gaza, whatever it is, just to continue expanding their control of the land of the terrorists and pushing as many Palestinians as they can out, whether it's 800,000 at one time, 1948, or as many that were expelled in 1967, or the 100,000 plus who've decided to leave the West Bank because of the situation since 2000, or just the daily trickle of people who are deciding to leave because they can't have a future in Palestine because of Israeli policies. Whatever it is, Israel's happy with it as it goes, and I think this is ultimately their end game.
I personally agree with Adam a lot, because really following what's happening on the ground in occupied Palestine and in Israel, actions speak louder than voice. Israel continues to waste time in these so-called negotiations, peace deals, roadmaps for peace. I call them cul-de-sac for death and destruction for the Palestinians. And every single day, Israel confiscates Palestinian lands. Every single day, Israel builds more colonies, brings more Jewish people. Every single day, Israel confiscates roads and claims they are only for security purposes for the Jews. Every single day they take identity cards from Palestinians in Jerusalem. And every day they build the apartheid wall. They destroy homes. They make the lives of the Palestinians unbearable. But they are there. They have been there for hundreds of years, and I'm sure they will continue to be there. But Israel continues to waste time and gains land by force every single minute. 713-526-5738 is the number. Let's take our next caller, and that would be Monica. Monica, you're on the air. Monica, can you hear us?
Oh, hello.
Hi,
oh,
Monica.
Hi. I'm just wanting to make it a statement. I mean, I'm really for human rights and for all around the world. I've grown up knowing what was happening in El Salvador and with the U.S. dollars. And it's just disgrace to me that we go around talking about freedom and, you know, 4th of July and, you know, it, and we do all these stuff, cause all these problems. So, I mean, I know we can debate it and say, you know, that's bad, but the problem is if we don't do anything, money is power, and to make movement, you have to have money. And to me, I think we should try to change the system to be like, you don't have to be so rich to run for office, because that's the problem, like, the money and the power. And it makes me mad that all the people just make a joke about, oh, peace in the Middle East, and nobody really takes it seriously. I just wish, I don't know what, how we can do to make more neutral, because they need to solve a problem. Like, they need to solve a problem, like, come with peace with everybody there, and not about me. I want this land, I want this state for me. So I don't know how in the world it could come to resolution when the U.S. is the one who caused the problem. So I don't know, it's a real problem, and I'm like, I wish talking would solve it, but I just wish something would come about more, you know, love for one another besides hate. But I know, you know, they tried peace, because I've known some people from Palestine, and they tried peace and it didn't work. So, but it just, I'm just real frustrated about, you know, how the lawmakers don't seem to care.
Okay.
You know?
Thanks, Monica, for your call, and I think thousands and thousands of people share your view and share your frustration, unable to do anything, wanting to know what to do or how to do things to make a difference. Politicians, we could talk for hours and hours and hours about their intentions and their agendas and what they say in public and what they do private and so on, and that could be a whole different topic. Before we take the next callers on hold, Kathy, share with us, please, what have you witnessed in Gaza when you went there in August to deliver the much-needed medical supplies? And that time was even before the Israeli criminal assault on the Gaza Strip at the end of December, early January, that virtually destroyed the Gaza Strip and left over 1,500 Palestinians killed, thousands injured, and countless list of crimes that they committed there. That was in August, because Gaza was still under siege at that time. What did you witness there?
Right. I actually was quite taken back by the whole experience. As I said earlier, I spent many years working in Haiti, and I was shocked to find such a parallel to what's going on in Palestine, well, in Gaza, but that, in fact, this was directly man-made by the occupation. And I found that I found an economy that was being strangled. I found people were incredibly patient. They were incredibly kind and bright. They kept the society intact. And so it was a very moving experience on many levels. But it was also one that I think encourages us, gives us strength, because they were not going to give up.
How were you treated by the Palestinians? What was your reaction when you first went there, and how they treated you?
Well, honestly, I felt guilt. They were so wonderful. They were the most incredible hosts I've ever experienced, and they had so many celebrations for us, and constantly went out of their way, and we felt very concerned because they had very few resources, but they certainly shared with us in such an extraordinary way. And also in their just wonderful hospitality. There was not a mean word said. They just look forward to their families, their society, and the fact that there was somebody there in solidarity with them. It was an extraordinary experience.
Very well. We lost the Adams line, by the way. We tried to get him back on the phone. In the meantime, the number again is 713-526-5738. Kathy, if you had the opportunity again, especially after this latest incident with the Israeli Navy, Israeli Army, would you do it again? Would you try to go again and to break the siege on Gaza?
My daughter went on the first voyage as well. We're signed up to go again in several months.
Wow. Very well. Well, let's take more calls. We have lots of callers already on hold. Let's take Matt is next. Matt, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you? How are you doing, Saeed?
Hi,
and Mark. And, if this...
Well, we've lost Matt. Matt, please call again. Let's take our next one, and that would be Dino. Dino, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, guys. I'm just wanted to bring out one topic here. I'm just puzzled that Why isn't it brought out in the open that the blackout here as far as news and things like that when it comes to Israel is imposed by the Jewish-owned media? And the same thing happens with the government. The politicians, like the other lady that called in, are pretty much under the influence of the Jewish-American lobby, and that's why there's a total blackout of credible information coming out of the news media. Why isn't this addressed properly?
Well, that's a good question, and I think we got Adam back on the line now. Adam, Dino was asking and wondering why is there so much blackout on the news media here in the U.S., Jewish-owned media, the politicians, why are they influenced so much that they don't speak and stand up for the truth and for human rights?
I think it's, you know, particularly as the caller said, there's quite a lot of influence, not just by who owns the media, but also, I mean, there are very effective lobby groups in this country who are working extremely hard to make sure that the media only presents one side of the story, and we have to work hard on the opposite side to also lobby the media. The media is a business, after all, although we like to think of it as something that, you know, is supposed to be a watchdog on the government and things like that. It is also a business, and we need to consider it as we approach it, that aspect of it, and work hard to affect its decisions. That said, I do know many, many reporters, journalists from many, many top, you know, U.S. Media outlets who do write good stories, who do, you know, try to report the truth from the ground, and when they send their stories back to their editors, they get chopped or they get excluded. And we need to continue to support those journalists who are trying to tell the truth and let them know to keep trying, you know, and working hard. But there are many, many obstacles along the way, and we have to address all of them.
All right. I've got 2 minutes left only, and I have two calls. So let's go ahead and take them, Matt, and then Ala. Please make your question very short and straight. Let's take Matt. Matt, we're glad you called again. You're on the air, Matt.
Hey, how you doing again? I just want to say congratulate you. I mean, at least thank all of you for everybody, you, Adam, and Kathy, just for your effort to get into Palestine, try to get to Gaza. I hope you can keep going again. And I just got to say that, you know, I hope people can really look at the Green Party in the long run. We were the only ones who, because since McKinney was our presidential candidate, we were the only ones who were demanding, we were going to Congress and contacting. We had a press conference here in Houston last week demanding to leave. So that's really the problem also. There's the Democrats and Republicans are both equally responsible what's going on there, because they continue to say loud just cheerlead for funding for Israel. And, you know, that's the biggest problem right now.
All right, thanks for your call. Let's take the last one, and that's from Ayla, I'm told to pronounce it. Ayla, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to ask a quick question. Doesn't anyone see the strange connection between the U.S., Iran, and Israel oppressing the Palestinians? Like, doesn't it seem like there's some type of a provocation trying to go on here? I mean, they just recently had their elections, And Ahmadinejad, I guess, was trying to take control. I don't know if he's either trying to take control or did he legitimately win the elections. I mean, who knows? But his statements were definitely inflammatory in the past. I don't know if there's a connection between these three countries.
Okay.
Three
Thanks states. For your call, Ella. Adam, do you think there's a connection? And we have only a few seconds left.
I mean, I think there are many connections, but I'm not exactly sure what the caller is referring to. There's probably a topic for another show.
Very well. I asked Kathy when the line got dropped with
yeah.
you. She is planning to go back there. She's already registered for the next trip to go to deliver medical supplies and other items to break the siege on Gaza. Will you do it again, Adam?
I would certainly do it again. I've already told my fellow detainees in prison to keep my bed warm. I'll be back.
Oh, boy. Well, any last thought, just 10 seconds or so from each of you. Adam, I'll start with you.
You know, the story really is not us. The story is the people of Gaza, and we have to keep focusing on that. The conditions are atrocious, and your voice, your radio program, Saeed, is one of the few outlets we can get that out there. So thank you.
Thank you. Kathy?
I agree completely with Adam. We want to focus on the Gazans, and thank you so much for keeping the story alive.
Very well.
And I wanted to just say to Ayla, there's a book that I'm reading right now called Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Israel, Iran, and the United States. It's worth a read. It's by a guy called Trita Parsi. And if you tune in Mondays at 7 p.m., there's a show that will be interviewing him very soon on
okay.
that topic.
Sure.
Very well. And we are almost out of time. I want to thank both guests, Adam Shapiro, Jewish-American activist, co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement in Palestine, who is a documentary filmmaker whose latest work is Chronicles of a Refugee, a six-part series about Palestinian refugees all over the world and their experiences of the last 61 years. Kathy Sheets, a medical officer, nurse, human rights activist, and filmmaker. Both Adam and Kathy were on board the Free Gaza Boat Spirit of Humanity trying to break the siege on Gaza last week when they were kidnapped by the State of Israel and they were jailed. But they were released after a week staying in jail, and they just returned to the U.S. Thank you, Adam and Kathy, so much for your time. And that's all the time we have this evening. Thanks for listening to Arab Voices. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next Wednesday, peace on earth.
It's still election season at KPFT. Over the last few weeks, we've been airing a lot of information about the elections because we want you to understand all the important aspects of the process. But right now, with a short time left in the nomination period, it's not a cliche, it's a very important truth. KPFT needs you. The whole Pacifica network, including KPFT, is at the most significant crossroads in its 60-year history. Nationally, music and culture and news media outlets are dwindling and becoming increasingly homogenized and corporatized. KPFT and the other Pacifica stations are the only places left where you can hear the news and music and information that really makes a difference in your community. It's what folks here in Houston really care about. But that crossroads is not only about media opportunity. It's about how the younger generations have gone through a national election cycle that has made them optimistic and ready to change the world, much in the same way young people...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.